It wasn't there yesterday. First, you have to hear this story about the rude American in London who was in a taxi and riding to his destination, and the friendly, witty Brit taxi driver thought he'd kind of be tour guide along the way as well. And as they were driving along, he pointed out, well, there's the Tower of London. They began construction in 1346, and it was completed in 1412. The arrogant American said, ugh, in America, we would have done it in 2 months. They passed Parliament, and the taxi guide continues, well, they began construction in 1544. It was completed in 1618. Again, he says, we Americans would have done it in a year. So they continue on, and the driver decides to be silent. As they're going, they pass by Westminster Abbey. The American looks and poses the question, well, what's that? And the witty Brit says, I don't know, wasn't there yesterday. So it's important to know the sequence of events when you tell a story. What comes before? And so as we look at the transfiguration of Jesus, we look at before. And just earlier, we are told that Jesus began to show his disciples that he must go to Jerusalem. And there he will face rejection and great suffering and death. He also talked of his followers, of his disciples, who they were to be and who they were to become. And their role to serve, to deny themselves, and to take up their cross. Make their effort to serve and build God's kingdom. And so then it is after that, 6 days later, that Jesus goes up a high mountain, we are told, leading Peter and James and John. This excursion then takes place before leaving the region of Galilee for Judea and the great hardship that awaits. It is there then that Jesus is transfigured. He takes on the outward appearance of the exalted spiritual transformation of God. His face shone like the sun. His clothes a dazzling white. And we are told also then was the appearance of Moses and Elijah. And that they talked with Jesus. Luke in his gospel adds a little more insight, saying that Moses and Elijah appeared. They spoke to Jesus about his departure. And literally translated, specifically, his exodus. Now that term is important because the lessons of the Exodus journey and the guidance provided by God. A couple hundred years ago, there was a man who was well known as a guide in Montana. And he decided after a long period of time, Montana, too cold, and decided he'd go further south and ended up in Colorado. Stationed himself in Denver and began to orient himself around the state of the territory of Colorado and learning the ways in which he could guide and to lead people through there. One particular party he led off, and after a period of time they realized that they were lost. So they approached the guide. They said to him, "We thought you were the best guide in Colorado." He assured them and said, "Yes, I am. But I think we're now in Wyoming." During the Exodus, the people of Israel were to place their trust in God, a God who would guide them and lead them. We're well aware of the story, how they too carried their doubts and their questions. But now we have Jesus who goes up the mountain, placing his trust in God's guidance for what he knows lies ahead. And so we have this sequence of events that once there is the commitment to go to Jerusalem, the understanding of the rejection, of the suffering, and the death that awaits. Now the effort is made to consult God, to go up the mountain and listen. As a result of that commitment and obedience, upon Jesus was the light and glory of God. Accepting God's guidance, he is then filled with a heavenly radiance. I often point out Peter's shortcomings. I think it's important for us that even though he was the leader of the disciples, that we recognize his humanness, and in many ways he was flawed himself, but there are times when he shows his strength and his insights, and this is one of them perhaps. For it is Peter's suggestion that they were to build three dwellings, put up three tents, that they would stay there on the mountain. Now you might think that he didn't want to return because he knew what awaited Jesus and what the fate would be. That's understandable. But also Peter recognized that this would be a transitional time. And so it was important to pause, to contemplate, to reflect, to experience the adulation placed upon Jesus, the surprise and the power and the beauty of God, to be in the adoring presence of God. And so first, it was important to be silent, to listen, and to just be filled with the wonder of it all. I like to think that over the years, we together here in this community have experienced the glory of God through our experiences in life, through our worship, through our support and building up and strengthening of one another. And I have relished those opportunities to be with you. And so before we look any further ahead, let us stop and contemplate and reflect. Let us experience this time on the mountain of God sharing with us, "This is my beloved. With him I am well pleased. Listen to him." So let us listen. Let us reflect. Let us celebrate. Let's not worry about rushing ahead or what is yet to come. For we know that the wondrous glory of God will clothe even the common things with radiance. And so we stop in appreciation of that promise. And then just as the disciples, there will be a time to come down the mountain and return to the journey, recognizing the road that Jesus has placed before us to join together of a people of service and of sacrifice, of looking forward to the opportunities that are before us, to be a people of anticipation and expectation of yet what yet can be and what yet will come. But before we ask, well, what now? Let us just join together in reflecting and celebrating what is.